smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf number 6. I'm Fred Green. Well, not gone completely, but we're here. We've tried very hard to put another show together, and we will continue to do so. But we want to get the best people possible for every Golf Better episode, and we've done it again. But joining me, as always, my partner in finding out the most we can, Kenny Nicholson.
Hey, Fred. Good to be here. Thank you very much.
And Kenny, of course, is the technical specialist for Edwin Watts Golf, who is the sponsor of this program. And also, you know Kenny from the Golf Smarter podcast, where he answers your questions and does product reviews. Kenny gets a lot of questions about golf balls. And since he's in Beaverton, Oregon today, he's at the headquarters of Nike, we thought we would get somebody who can answer a lot on golf balls. It's a very interesting topic, and it's something that just seems to be obvious, but it's not. And to answer our questions, we have Mark Allen, who's the product marketing director for Nike Golf Balls. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's get a little bit of history about you and Nike, how long you've been there, and what it is exactly that you do.
Yeah, I actually, it's the first job out of college. I started with Nike, and so it's been 15 years now. Kind of moved me around the country a little bit. I was working on the footwear side and moved around to Wisconsin, Florida, Texas, and made my way back here to Portland. Portland, Oregon is where our headquarters, in Beaverton, actually. And been working out here since 96 and been in the golf division since 2000 and working on golf balls the entire time.
And when Nike went into the golf division, that was not their primary focus. In getting into the sporting goods industry, what brought them to golf?
I think it was obviously, you know, Nike as a whole has been involved with all sports. You know, if you have a body, you're an athlete. And when you take a look at golf as a sport, obviously there's athletes all around, and Tiger's the epitome of that. And we saw it as a great opportunity, obviously, to bring world-class products to that sport as well and provide golfers with equipment that was going to help their game.
And obviously Nike is competing with some well-established manufacturers in, let's go right to golf balls, because that's what your focus is. It's not a market that was really wide open, was it?
You know, golf balls, the production of golf balls goes back hundreds of years, and so we are, you know, relatively young in this industry. We actually first started introducing golf balls to the marketplace back in 99, and we were a small player, but I think there was a lot of anticipation as to what we were going to bring to the market and what we were going to offer to consumers, and we've made a lot of headway over those years, and today we represent a strong market share in the marketplace. We're still growing and developing as a company, but I think we've really established ourselves, obviously, as a key player and innovator in the marketplace.
And how did you do that?
Well, I think over the years, you obviously take a look at product first. Product is king, and you can't come to the marketplace without product that works. And back in 2000, a year after we started introducing product to the market, we had the tour accuracy hit. And in January of 2000, Paul Azinger put that product in play at the Sony Open and won with it. And just 6 months later, Tiger switched from a wound ball construction to the tour accuracy and won 4 straight majors with that. So that was an eye-opener, I think, to not only the industry but consumers, that we were definitely a player and brought product that was going to perform for the best athletes in the world. And, there's a lot of other elements that go into building success within this industry. There's a lot of competition, a lot of product at retail, a lot of choices for the consumer. And I think, you know, our ultimate goal is to provide the best product possible, the best, most advanced, innovative product to the consumer and get it in their hands. And I think once we get it in the consumer's hands, they have a good experience with it. I think we're going to have some retention out there and get some people switching to our product.
I find it fascinating that you say the product is king, which of course it is, but Nike is probably more associated with endorsements than and the product follows. How critical to establishing yourself in the marketplace is your endorsements.
Well, I think obviously athletes, where would we be without athletes? You know, the product can't survive without athletes in the marketplace utilizing your product. And, you know, when we look at the athletes that Nike has, obviously a lot of them are the best athletes in the world and perform to the highest levels. And it brings a lot of credibility to the brand if you have some of the top players in the world playing your product or utilizing your equipment, wearing your apparel, and performing to their best using it. And I think in a lot of the minds of consumers, that validates the technology and the construction and advancements in the product, that if it can be played on the world-class stage, that it's going to perform for them as well.
Do you find, though, that the products developed for a consumer and the product developed for a tour player can cross over well?
Yeah, I think so. And in a lot of cases, you know, when you take a look at our product line, we have a lot of different products that meet a lot of different consumer criteria, whether it's performance, materials, whether it's ball flight, whether it's a distance story that the consumer's looking for, or a price point zone. We pretty much cover it throughout our pyramid of products. And so we offer the consumer many different choices, and there's a lot of advantages that a consumer can take advantage of, a lot of performance advantages. In our urethane product that's used on tour, they can find a lot of the same type of performance benefits themselves.
And does Nike pick talent for their endorsements? Do you go after quality versus quantity? Would you rather have the best two or three players in the world versus having 20 players? Or how do you decide how you're going to do that?
I would agree with you. I think it's quality versus quantity. And you know, there's a lot of companies that can go out and buy buy the count or buy athletes to play their product. But, you know, we really want to work with some of the best athletes in the world. Obviously, we want to work with athletes that you know, see the benefits of our products, and we don't want to get in a race to purchase athletes and get them into playing the product. So, it's more about quality of the individual, the athlete, and you know, how they perform with the product.
And do you get to work with any of these athletes?
Sure. Yeah, you bet.
Tell me a story.
So this is something that I think not a lot of people know about, but I think a fair amount. You know, Tiger, typically when we go test with him, now Rock Ishii's our R&D director for golf balls, and he works very closely with Tiger. And in one of the sessions in testing with Tiger, and you guys may remember the TV ads that we had several years ago where Tiger was doing the hacky sack, or hitting balls through windows of a building with the same club. Yeah, just amazing ability to...
Now, come on. Was that real when he was hitting through the windows?
Yeah. That was actually...
Really? That wasn't CGI stuff?
So, what was that?
That wasn't, like, all computer-generated?
Oh, no.
That was
all actual. Yep. He is able to take a club and manipulate it, you know, press his hands forward, hit it low, hit it high, and pick out those spots. And I believe on that take, it only took one take. Now, the hacky sack ad, I think it was two takes when he did that. So he, if anybody's ever been to one of his clinics and seen how he's able to pull off some of these trick shots, it's truly amazing. It's one thing to go to a driving range at an event and watch him just hit balls. And a lot of the professionals are very consistent, obviously, in their ball striking and can hit spots. And then when you see Tiger at the range hitting these shots, it's truly amazing to see how consistently accurate these guys are and how they're able to control the ball and manipulate the ball flight. And so, yeah, those ads were not computer generated at all.
Wow, I'm blown away. So you were telling a different... Was that the story?
Yeah, those are a couple there, but he obviously, when we do testing with him, a lot of times we'll test with him on course, obviously, and it'll be at his home course or on site somewhere at a tournament. And really where he starts out is around the greens, and start testing product close to the greens and sees how it spins and how it responds around the greens. And if the ball isn't doing what he wants it to do around the greens, he'll kick the ball out and, you know, let's try a different one. So from a product performance standpoint, that is really an area where he focuses a lot of attention around how the ball performs around the greens. And it's not unlike a lot of other athletes, but one of the things we were testing with them was we had a couple of balls that we were wanting to introduce and see if, you know, what Tiger thought of them. And a lot of times you have a mound of balls that you're working with and he's testing and hitting on the range and hitting shot after shot. And we had a couple of prototype balls that were just a couple of points harder in what we call Shore D ratings. And Shore D is essentially what the reading is on how firm a cover is or a material is. And we were talking about something that was just a couple of points difference. And he hit one shot with it and noticed a difference right away in how the ball sounded and how the ball flew off the club face, and took the next one, bounced it on his wedge, and said, you threw one in on me, didn't you, Rock? And anybody else would never be able to pick that up, but he's just a different type of athlete. He just has such a good sense for the game, such good feel, and obviously is probably one of the most discerning you know, testers that we have in terms of being able to utilize Tiger for testing and trying to figure out what product is going to work, what product is, you know, what's going to spin better around the greens, what's going to be better for the consumer. He is by far, he's got these, like a sixth sense. He can pick out a lot of these things that really no other athlete can.
Unbelievable. And I'm going to just do one more People Magazine type question before we let Kenny loose and
okay.
And do what we're here to do, which is talk about golf balls. I can only imagine that the day that Tiger made that shot where the ball hung on the lip for a week and a half before it fell in on a Sunday, everyone speculated what Nike must have done. You know, their excitement on Monday morning when they all got to work. But what happened?
It was an incredible moment, actually. That, obviously, people, we get questions all the time about that. How much do you think that was worth, that shot, in terms of Nike's kind of the word of mouth that we've gotten on it, the amount of TV spots that we've seen over and over of that shot? And it's hard.
Nike couldn't buy that.
On it.
Yeah.
I tell a lot of people, it's, you know, I'm going to be old and gray sitting in my rocking chair watching the Masters, and they're still going to be showing those shots. And it's one of those things where I think it's just going to last throughout history. It's just one of those amazing moments that Tiger seems to continually pull off.
And I have to believe that Monday morning everyone came to work with a huge grin on their face.
Oh, sure. Oh, you bet. it was a talk for a long time. And actually, the funny thing is that product that he was playing during that event was the One Platinum. And it had not been released at retail yet. And so that shot and the amount of media coverage we got around that shot and around the ball that he was playing really catapulted that ball at retail. Once it hit 30 days later, it was in high demand. So
talking about a product launch,
it was it was pretty incredible.
Kenny, go ahead.
No, real quick, I want to touch base on their Stableford of players. I think you guys have about 16,
mm-hmm.
Mark. And if you think about it from a brand perspective, their guys are head to toe Nike guys, and then if you look at any other manufacturer out there, they you know, it's kind of hard to think that, you know, hey, we're going to get you in your socks, shoes, pants, shirt, hat, glove, and clubs, and that's what we would like to have at the end of the day. And it's a hard goal to attain, and they've done such an awesome job of doing that. And the guys that they have, I mean, if you just, all you have to do is look at the Ryder Cup teams and look at the top 50 in the world and see how many of them are,
right,
are head to toe. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. You look at the FedEx Cup rankings right now, we've got three out of the top five guys in there.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, Rory, KJ, and Tiger. So
wow.
And when those guys are performing well, we've got great athletes, obviously. It's about quality, and when you see watch on the weekends, our brand is there in force.
Yeah, I'm going to bring this up. This is a bone of contention only for me, probably, but I was looking at your website before we started the interview, and there's the picture of Rory on there, Rory Sabatini. After he's completed his golf shot and the ball and his club head comes all the way around on a driver. And I've also seen multiple shots where there's pictures of Tiger at the end of his swing with a driver. Mm-hmm. And it drives me crazy that the Nike logo is upside down. Am I the only one who's ever noticed that?
You know what he's talking about, right, Mark?
What's that?
You know what he's talking about.
Yeah, okay. The follow-through on swings.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it, I guess. I mean, we obviously, with that driver, have had tremendous success with it, and it's very iconic, the yellow on the sole of the club. And I think it's, a lot of it is, how this product looks at retail and the position of the logos and things like that. So when you get on course and you get that photo of the follow-through and if the swoosh is a little bit twisted, then...
I can tell you Fred's lost sleep over this.
But it's crazy because...
You got to get a new follow-through.
Well, you got to get a new photographer. But, I mean, like the Apple computer, the laptops, everybody ever, their product placement on TV and movies has been great. And once they realize that when people are sitting at the laptop with it open and the shot is looking at them and the Apple logo is upside down, they flopped it over.
Right.
Okay? So now I see this picture of Tiger on his follow-through, and it's like, the swoosh is upside down.
So that's one for marketing.
Yep, there you go. But you noticed it, and you're talking about it. So you know that it's a Nike club, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. That swoosh is right up there with probably the Star of David and the Catholic cross as far as the most recognizable logos in the world, at least from my perspective.
Let's move into product.
Okay.
We could spend all day, because I'm telling you right now, being out here is... It's been boring, Fred. I just have to be honest with you.
I'm sure that you miss the humidity of Florida right now.
This place, I do not miss. This place is phenomenal.
The weather's been nice out here. Yeah.
Weather's been great. It's hot, but it's definitely not humid.
All right, let's talk about golf balls.
Okay.
Go ahead, Kenny.
Real quick, obviously the biggest change for most consumers out there was the going from a wound ball to a solid core ball. Can you explain the evolution of that just a little bit?
Wound ball construction, as we all know, was played by almost all tour professionals and was really seen as the technology of choice. And when solid core construction, seamless urethane ball, the Tour Accuracy came out, and Tiger played that product in competition, was so successful with it. Really the big difference between the two. Now, wound ball construction, a lot of people talked about that product providing great feel. You were able to get good spin around the greens with it, but it was also very inconsistent, not only in the manufacturing process, but it would get out of round after a few shots. And we know when a sphere that's spinning through the air gets out of round, you're not going to have consistent ball flight with it. You're going to have lopsided golf ball that's going to be spinning out of the target point that you were looking at. So solid core construction golf balls really took that to a new level in terms of consistency. We also use injection molded urethane covers, so there's no seam on our golf balls. And that was another big advantage to the Tour Accuracy, was that we didn't have a seam on the golf ball. So we had this very consistent shape, and also the construction, there was no seam on the ball. So you would have this very predictable, very consistent ball flight out of the product. And we were seeing, obviously when Tiger was putting that product in play, he was lights out, and a lot of players on tour took notice of that and started to, look at that product and say, well, what is it about this that's so great? And I think, the rest is history. The wound ball died within a few months after that was put in play by Tiger, and he started having so much success with it.
It did. It changed the golf industry quicker than anything I have seen.
Yeah, there's not a manufacturer that produces a wound construction golf ball now.
You're exactly correct. With that being said, the majority, obviously with wound golf balls, they were the big number that everybody looked at was compression. Mm-hmm. It was an 80 compression, 90 compression, and now you don't see that as much. But it's a question that we constantly get. Mm-hmm. you know, what is the compression of the golf ball? Mm-hmm. And why that number is not as important, or is it still as important? Was it just a number or a selling point back then?
Yeah, compressions were, you know, actually a lot of times placed on the side of the product. So you would look at it and say, okay, this is a 90 compression golf ball, or this is a 100 compression. But in one of the things with the windings of those products is that there's very inconsistent production processes. So you might have a ball that wasn't really a 90 compression within the same dozen. You may have a ball that's 92 compression, and another ball within the same dozen box that was an 87 compression. So depending on, you know, how that was, how tight the tolerances were at manufacturing site, you had a little bit of variance in there because you were dealing with rubber bands, basically, and variables in how that was actually placed on the ball or the durability of that material. So compression readings still exist. They're just not communicated as much, like you said, on packaging or on product as they've been in the past. We are looking at compression readings that are coming down, specifically on the one product. We're in the low 80s on our compression of those products. And one of the reasons for that is that the rubber materials that we use in the cores are much more advanced than they were years back. You needed a firmer, harder, larger core in the past to generate the type of velocity that you needed off the club face to get distance. And because you had a lot of those rubber bands around the product, now we're able to, with the rubber technologies that we've incorporated into our products, we're able to lower the compression, which improves the feel of the product. It also helps to reduce some of the excess spin that you can place on a ball off of the tee. And, you know, really that's going to help a majority of amateur golfers because really, you know, we're trying to keep it in the fairway. We're trying to hit it long. We're not trying to put too much spin on the ball, which can obviously either slice or hook or make the ball balloon in the air, make it climb too high. So there's a lot of advantages to a lower compression core. Now, you know, the differences between those, you know, why we're not communicating that this year or in recent years versus in the past is really, you know, the consumer, I think, is looking for what the benefit is. Tell us what the ball is going to do and how it's going to perform better for me. In a lot of cases, you know, numbers don't mean a ton to a lot of people. I know we still get questions about it, but at the same time, it's still about what the ball is going to do. How is it going to perform on course? Which ball is the right ball for me?
So, and, I mean, that being said, somebody with a slower swing speed obviously would look for a ball that has a lower compression.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That allows the ball to compress against the club face a little easier. Yeah,
it's common sense, mm-hmm. pretty much. The other thing also is there's multi-layer golf balls. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you go from two-piece, three-piece, and four-piece. What, as far as from a benefit standpoint, let's say an average golfer with a slower swing speed that's looking to buy a golf ball that's going to benefit him, are there two-piece balls out there that are fine? Is three-piece better, or mm-hmm. four-piece, and so on?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are actually, like you said, there's multi-layer, and when we're talking about two-piece construction golf ball, typically a little bit more distance-oriented products, and also because of the construction method, are able to save some costs and pass those costs on to the consumer and make it a little bit more accessible price points. There's been advances in two-piece construction or technology where we're able to, you know, again, soften the core, make the ball feel better. In years past, two-piece construction golf balls were considered, you know, very hard and like rocks and didn't feel as good as a premium product. And those have been improved over the years. And the Power Distance PowerSoft is one great example. That was a product that was rated by a leading consumer magazine as the best buy out there, number two rated golf ball by this magazine, just behind the Nike One Black as number one rated. So we had tremendous success with that product because there's a lot of consumers looking for a great value, but really looking for a great performance and feel out of two-piece construction. When you look at multi-layer is adding just another dimension of technology and performance attributes for the better player or more skilled player when they're looking to shape shots with their irons or be able to control the spin around the greens. You see a lot of pros on tour when they hit that shot into the green and the ball's backing up on them. The hits takes a couple of hops and backs up. Urethane construction golf balls really allow them to do that. Obviously, the technology and the clubs and the wedge and the grooves assist with that, but urethane is really what's going to allow that that ball to spin the way it does. It's a little bit more difficult to do that with a Sirlin or an ionomer two-piece construction golf ball.
Mark, this is absolutely a fascinating conversation, but we do have to let people get to work here. So could you please come back and continue this conversation about golf balls and specifically Nike golf balls?
Of course. We'd love to. Love to.
Yeah, but before you go, how about if we announce that we're going to be giving some golf balls away? Can we give away some Nike golf balls?
We'd love to give golf balls away. We got to get it in the hands of people, so let's do it.
That's the best way to do it. Kenny, are you going to be able to help us out on this?
Sure. We love to give stuff away on this show.
So, yeah,
we'll give a couple dozen away.
Awesome. So if you'd like to register to win a couple of dozen Nike golf balls of your choice, go ahead to golfbetterpodcast.com and click on the register to win button and fill out the information. And of course, while you're there, go shopping. This is at edwinwattsgolf.com, and they have great prices and great selection, and they support this podcast and the Golf Smarter podcast, and we appreciate it, and we would like your support of them so we can continue doing these podcasts. Now, deadline for entries are October 6th, 2007. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'd love your feedback. Please write reviews on iTunes. There hasn't been many, but we like to get your feedback. And other golfers also like to know what you think about the show. I can talk about it forever, but it really is about what you think. So golfbetterpodcast.com and your reviews on iTunes. And of course, we invite you to listen to the Golf Smarter podcast as well. We'll be back in a couple weeks with part two of this conversation with Mark Allen. But please, we'd love to hear from you, whether you have a comment, a suggestion, recommendation, or a question. Please send it via email to golfbetter@edwinwattsgolf.com.